On 14th of December 2013, a US drone missile struck a fishing boat in the Kabul River in the Loi Shalman area of Pakistan's Khyber Agency. The news was broken that a US Predator attack had killed five suspected militants. A safe phrasing that gave the United States plausible deniability that the dead were civilians, while incriminating the victims of terrorism. This phrasing created a prosperous narrative in Western circles. Now, the following quotes are comments parsed from Western's The Long War Journal on suspected militant deaths in Pak Afghanistan region in September 2013. The first quote is, "Nice kill, but still not enough. Larger number of these people need to be killed. This petty cake pin prickling of state's adversaries is insufficient, a waste of resources, manpower, and time." And the second quote, "I sure hope that the CIA is sowing dissension and mistrust amongst these cockroaches. Best way to eliminate them is to turn them against each other. Go drones." Almost all of the 400 plus US drone attacks in Pakistan are claimed by the West to have killed suspected militants. In reality, nearly all of them are undocumented. In October 2006, US drone attack in Pakistan's Bajor agency killed over 70 children as it targeted a school, while a 2009 drone attack killed more than 80 civilians at a funeral in North Waziristan. The only way to confirm the dead? Risk the security's challenges and visit the local areas. This investigative foray takes us to Khyber Agency, one of the Pakistan's seven federally administered tribal areas. Located in the country's northwest region, bordering Afghanistan, the area is rugged, mountainous, and isolated. While I went in to investigate only one drone attack, the local tribes brought me eyewitnesses for two. The first drone attack occurred in December 2013 in Loi Shalman, the other in September 2015 in the Lalpura Dharmagarh sector. The Pentagon claimed that both strikes killed suspected militants. We gather local testimonies and oral histories from eyewitnesses, victims' families, and those who knew the victims. The full methodology of one-minute massacres can be viewed in the respective link. Khyber Agency has historically been a volatile and militancy-prone region. The region fiercely resisted the British expansion during the British Raj, holding regional importance. It's a strategically critical mountain route that connects the subcontinent to Afghanistan and Russia. Pakistani control has fared only marginally better, as long as the state allows tribal courts, Pashtunwali, and tribal councils like Jirga to dominate social and political life. Our investigative fieldwork started in August 2025 when the Pakistani state was deeply embedded in fighting Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan in the agency's south. Attached is a picture of the Shahgai fortress in the Khyber Agency, which is manned by the Frontier Corps, depicting how Khyber Agency in Fatah is one of the most militarized regions in Pakistan. The volatility of the region made a political escort impossible. Even my political contacts in mainstream parties were unwilling to facilitate safe entry, given the ongoing warfare. Of course, this called for undercover work. A journey begins in Jamrud, a town outside the provincial capital Peshawar, at the base of mountains that form the Khyber Agency. Here, I met local journalists and sought tips. Not shown is a picture of the Khyber Gate. The Khyber Gate in Jamrud marks the start of Pakistan's Khyber Agency. Rugged and mountainous, the agency is the historical gateway into Central Asia, Afghanistan, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, and Russia. It is controlled by fiercely independent Pashtun tribes that live on either sides of the Pak-Afghan border. I began the first leg of the journey to the frontier town of Lundi Kotal. Now, Lundi Kotal is a military town. The mountains surrounding it are topped by strategic fortresses Mishni, Shahgai, and Ali Masjid, manned by the Khyber Rifles Regiment of the Frontier Corps. These massive fortresses overlook the valleys leading into Pakistan's Turkam border crossing with Afghanistan. Home to bustling bazaars, small stores, and sloping roads, Lundi Kotal is a de facto social hub for the tribes that inhabit the surrounding mountain valleys. For me, it was an opportunity to resupply. Jagged cliffs and mountains give the town an indomitable vibe. My network in Lundi Kotal supplied me with local contacts in the Loi Shalman area where the US drones had struck. Now the challenge was to traverse the rugged mountain valleys going north into one of Pakistan's most isolated areas. As an outsider to the tribal areas where every man knows the other, I stood out. Tribesmen will not take outsiders to remote areas without vetting or references, which are called hawalas locally. However, my contacts turned out to be quite good. The local shopkeepers arranged for a transport heading to Loi Shalman. Transportation is sparse and few. Tribes depend on these cars to ferry vegetables, commodities, and general goods from Lundi Kotal. I was crammed into a car with six other locals and a trunk that refused to lock. I was told that military checkposts do not take kindly to outsiders, so I should speak Pashto, the local language. Closer to the peak, after an hour of rocky terrain, the driver stopped at a flowing spring. The locals invited me to freshen up with spring water. which was cold and refreshingly tasty. Above us, in the surrounding cliffs, I could see the mountain forts of the Pakistani military, keeping watch over the Pakistan-Afghanistan border, which made me realize that this is not a safe area. We then descended into a relatively flat valley below. I was close to my destiny. The descending slopes gave way to a series of small settlements in the Lower Shilwan range. My contact dropped me off at the hujra of a local influential. The news of my arrival had spread, and it wasn't long before I met eyewitnesses. Habib wasn't part of any wrong group. A middle-aged man with spectacles approached me first on a hurried phone call with the families of the victims. I confusedly looked down at my dossier from the 2013 Lower Shilwan drone attack. The media reports of that time are typically devoid of any names or identity confirmation. So I asked this Habib person, he was killed in the 2013 attack, to which the man clarified, Habib was killed in a drone attack in 2015. His name was Habibur Rahman. On a hunch, I opened the 1 minute massacre entry of the 2015 Lalpura Dharmakot drone attack, which happened not far from my present location. Here, the media reports had confirmed the death of a local Taliban commander named Habib. So I said, the media reports claimed that Habib was a commander of the Afghan Taliban. The gathered tribesmen all looked at me, confused and outraged. They told me that Habib was a local laborer who tended to crops. He was not a member of any Taliban. And then I realized that I wasn't meeting the victims and witnesses of a single drone attack, but two of them. The tribesmen were eager to talk. This was the first time they'd been asked their side of the story. And now we begin to uncover the truth of the 2013 drone attack, where the Western narrative was that a drone missile struck a boat that was filled with armed men, and it killed five suspected militants and injured two. However, the local perspective is that a US drone missile struck a fishing boat that killed five fishermen and left two injured. The tribespeople had called a special guest for me, a young man wrapped in a chador, a young Pashtun. An eyewitness told me that this boy was 11 or barely 12 when the Americans killed his father. Another elderly told me that the eldest boy in the family, do you know the youngest man, has to step up when his father dies, take care of the mother and youngsters. And then another tribal elder told me that this young man had been laboring the day since his father died. So when he was 12 or 11, he's been working ever since then. Now, I invited this young man to record a video testimony to present his own story. And as I pressed record, the young man's eyes glistened. He wiped his eyes and hid his face beneath the fabric. I saw a tremble in his lips, and he stood up, visibly shaking, regressing to the same 12-year-old boy who had lost his loving father. My father wasn't a terrorist, I heard his voice, the first he'd spoken out of frame. I can't do this, the young man shook his head and ran to the farthest sharpie. Bound to good ethics, I deleted the recorded video on the spot. Minutes later, the young man returned. He consented to having his picture taken and his story told. And then he ran outside. I did not see him again. An eyewitness, Bacha Khan, who personally knew the boy's father, was next. He was amongst the first to visit the attack site and reported seeing carnage and bloodshed. His complete oral history is attached in the video. Now, after dozens of calls to the victims' families and community leaders, the tribespeople were able to confirm the precise details of the victims. And this is the first time the victims' names have been recorded in any format. So the men who were killed in this particular attack were all civilians, they were all fishermen. The first man was Gulrang, the second was Abdul Rauf, the third was Rashid, the fourth was Nasir, the fifth was Farooq, and then we have Hamid and Shabir Khan, who were injured as a result of this attack. Eyewitnesses reported having seen drones loitering in the skies earlier during the daytime. Unlike the Waziristan agencies, American drones in the sky were new for the Khyber tribes. Now, a direct quote, there was a lot of confusion. We heard the blast, but did not know where it came from. Drone attacks were unheard of in our area. Another quote, we have always been a peaceful people. Our tribes never gave refuge to Taliban or any other militant groups. The next quote, the Americans attacked our people before the Taliban did. Next quote, the men on the boats were all known to us. We rarely work with outsiders. Everyone knows everyone. There was no one working for militants. And another quote, the codfish was sold in Landikotar and Peshawar. It has been our way of living for generations. Now that this wrapped up the 2013 drone attack, we move to the testimonies and eyewitness accounts of the 2015 drone attack, where the Western narrative is that a drone missile struck a van that killed Afghan Taliban fighters, which included a local Taliban commander by the name of Habib. However, the local perspective was that a US drone missile struck farm workers who were working in the fields at the closing of the shift at around 8 or 9 in the evening, which killed five farm workers. Now, a van was admittedly parked close to them. Now, this is essentially a classic signature strike, where the US servicemen casually passed death sentences to innocents for showing behavior that the CIA thought was similar to militants. Now, the Bashar Khan presents his testimony again, and he says, and I quote, "Their corpses rotted for the night in the open field. Animals gnawed them. They were all wage workers," Bashar Khan confirmed on a call for my benefit with the Malik who owned the farmland in question. Now, another elder testified that the explosion was deafening. "We had never heard anything so loud. People were afraid to leave their homes to check out." Another man added that we had heard that they attacked the same spot again to kill the rescuers too. Now, double taping was used by the CIA to confirm kills. It happened commonly in Pakistan's tribal areas, but it commonly killed civilians who were actually trying to rescue the survivors. Now, Bashar Khan presented his testimony once again, and he mentioned that Habib was his friend. He took off his glasses. Grief was still fresh in his eyes. He shook his head repeatedly and said Habib was not a militant. He was not with the Emirat-Islami Afghanistan or the Taliban. There is no proof. Now, soon more calls came pouring in. They were from the victims' families. For the first time, someone had come asking about their grief and their story. So they presented me with the names of the victims. The first victim was Habib of Rahman. The second was the son of Zarawar. The third victim was Hukmaran, the son of Khairullah. The fourth man was Mirzaib, the son of Gula Khan. And the fifth man was Ajis, the son of Sarjan. They were all confirmed by testimonies to be working in the farm. They were not affiliated with any militant organization. Now, the one-minute massacre hypothesis is that a local informant learned one of the victims' name when he was moved to the hospital. The information was thereafter leaked to Afghanistan, and from there it went to the Pentagon, and it was leaked to the Western media saying that this particular person named Habib was a local Taliban commander, just to pad the success rates. Now, another oral history testimony is presented in a video form, and I will be wrapping up this article with direct quotes from the testimonies that I collected. So the first quote is, "Our area is safe. It is safer than Islamabad. We have never fought against anyone. There is no crime in our area. We were all in shock over what happened. People were fearing for their lives. Talks about moving away." The third quote, the bodies were collected in the morning after ambulances came over from Lendikotal. And the fourth quote, "The dead were disrespected, exposed to animals. They had done nothing wrong." Now that all the testimonies were collected, and the Pashtun tribe that I visited, known for their hospitality, the locals arranged a feast for me. The women cooked an assortment of chicken karai, chicken liver, okra and lentils, and they presented a lot of tea. I spent the night under the starless sky, meditating on my mission. The morning came, and it was time to head back to Peshawar before rumors of my intrigue reached elsewhere. But not before being served a breakfast of local honey-infused kava, cornbread and parathas.